12:30, we're going to start. We have a few announcements, but we will wait until the more of the committee members are here to make the announcements. The agenda today is we will be hearing from the Met Council on their bonding project status update. What I decided to do first this year is to actually ask these organizations that we gave money last year, what did they do with the money before they come begging again for additional money. And so the Met Council has the time and the floor today to give an overview of what they did with the bonding money that they received last year. And Mr. Shetton, I don't have a list of testifiers. I'm going to let you run the show today.
Sounds good to me. Thanks.
We do that for our constituents, you know.
Oh, well, thank you. thank you, Madam Chair and members. We appreciate the opportunity to be back before your committee. I think it's as strange as it seems, I really enjoy this, and it's that time of year, so let's have at it. I have a few folks that will be joining me at the table today. The first will be Tom Weaver, our regional administrator. Our chair, Peter Bell, is not available today, but he sends his regards to the committee. We will also hear from Arlene McCarthy, who is the new Nacho Diaz, and I will quit calling her that very soon, but we just need to get her in front of all the committees so that you can put the name with the face. And then we'll hear from Beth Woodstrom Anderson, who's our CFO, and Brian Lamb, the general manager at Metro Transit. But my boss is here, so I'll let him have a few words.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Weaver. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Tom Weaver. I'm the regional administrator at the Metropolitan Council. And I'd like to thank the committee for giving us a chance to appear before you today. And I just wanted to take advantage of this opportunity to introduce the committee to Arlene McCarthy. For those of you who have not had a chance to meet her, she's been with the Met Council, actually, for about 17 years. She's a registered professional engineer. She's overseen the design and construction of many of our major facilities, ranging from wastewater interceptors to the East Metro Garage. So she knows how to build stuff. She also really understands and appreciates the need to work closely with our partners, which is one of the things that I think really qualify her for this job. She is our new director of Metropolitan Transportation Services. Nacho's going to take a shot at retirement. So Arlene is stepping into that, and I'm very confident that the committee will find her to be extremely professional and responsive to your needs. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Arlene.
Welcome to the committee. So state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Arlene McCarthy, Director of Metropolitan Transportation Services. I also would like to thank you for the opportunity here to bring forward some information on our bonding bill, current status, and our request, and also the regional transit capital. On our first, just to give you an update, on, as you said, the funds that we received last year through the bonding bill. There were four projects. The Cedar Avenue Bus Rapid Transit received $10 million in the bill last year. This project is being led by Dakota County Regional Rail Authority. And the bond funds are being applied to phase one components of the project, which are underway. These funds are very important to the completion of phase one. There are several components that together are estimated to be $31 million. And right now, including the $10 million in bonding, Dakota County has about $15 million lined up. So they are continuing to work to assemble the funds to complete the phase one. So that I think that project is, and I'll give you a little bit more information on Cedar in a few minutes. Central, the $5.25 million that was received last year will be used for preliminary engineering, which is expected to start later here in 2006. The Rush Line Corridor project received $500,000. And that fund was designated for local match to federal money. To date, they have funded $190,000 towards local match to construction of the Forest Lake Transit Center. And another local match was $72,000 to the 35 County Road 17 Park and Pool Lot. And the remaining amount of their $500,000 will go towards local match for safety lieu federal funds that they've just received. And the last project that received bonding authority last year was the Red Rock Corridor. And Washington County, leading this project, intends to use that also as local match to federal dollars for the draft environmental impact statement, which the study, they'll be starting that later in 2006. Right now they're in the alternatives analysis phase of that project.
And if I might, I said you're going to talk more about Cedar Lake later. Are you going to talk more about the rush line later as well?
No, I was not planning to.
When you said the remainder would be used to match Safety Lou, is that for park and rides? What, are you building more infrastructure? Are you doing planning?
Madam Chair and committee members, I believe that it's a combination. They do have more infrastructure planned with that project. Mm-hmm. Yes, and I can contact Ramsey County to get the details.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping the purpose today was to find out how you spent the money. What did you build? What did you do? So I'd like at least some delineation of the $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing with it?
Certainly, we will provide that for you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. As far as the 2006 bonding request, we have three transit projects that are requesting funds this year. The 35W Bus Rapid Transit, the Central Corridor Transitway, and the Cedar Avenue BRT. And together, those projects are $15.8 million. I did want to mention that we do not have North Star Commuter Rail listed here. That is not a council request. That is a MnDOT request. But we do want to acknowledge that project and mention our support for it. North Star is an important component of our regional transit plan. To take a few minutes on these three projects, 35WBRT, the study that was requested by the legislature was complete and submitted, and now we're moving into the implementation phase. This project does have a couple phases, but the first one will be starting here in 2006. This is a partnership with MnDOT and the Met Council, and we're coordinating the first phase with MnDOT as they will be starting work on the Highway 62 Crosstown and 35W Interchange later this year. The phase one has several components. There's an online station at 46th Street, and that will be built with the MnDOT project coordinated with that. There's also a park and ride lot planned in Lakeville that will be on MnDOT right-of-way between County Road 46 and County Road 50. And another component of this phase one project are some bus shoulder lanes, about 4 miles of lanes between Highway 13 and County Road 46. So this request of $8.3 million for 35W is for two components. $3.3 million is designated for the 46th Street station, and the remaining $5 million for a park ride at 82nd Street near at the 494 35W interchange.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How long is the I-35W bus rapid transit? You mentioned 4 miles of bus shoulder lanes that are going to be put in place. Is that the length, or are there only just a small smidgen?
Ms. McCarthy.
Chair and Representative, the corridor is 24 miles long. It runs from downtown Minneapolis to Lakeville. So that was just a component there, the 4 miles.
Okay, thank you.
Continue.
The second project in the 2006 request is the Central Corridor Project. Ramsey County Railroad Authority is leading the project at this time, which is in the alternatives analysis and draft environmental impact statement phase. We are anticipating that the draft EIS will be released very soon for public comment. The FTA has that in their hands at this time. We have provided the information that they have requested for that, and we are hoping to hear from them very soon on a release of some figures such that the EIS can then be released for public comment. The EIS puts forward the two alternatives that are being considered right now on Central Corridor, and that is bus rapid transit and light rail transit. there will be a public comment period, and after public comment, then the locally preferred alternative will be selected.
Can you tell me how much of the $5.25 million has been expended already and on what?
From the 2005 request. I believe that the majority of that is targeted for the preliminary engineering work on Central Corridor, which will be starting after the locally preferred alternative is selected.
So we don't know how much we've spent already and how much is on hand then?
I believe that the entire amount is allocated for the preliminary engineering phase.
And so then how are the costs of preparing the EIS and the current study that's being done, how is that being funded?
Madam Chair and Representatives, I believe that has been funded in part through some federal funds.
So would it be fair to say then that no state funds have been expended yet in the development of the Central Corridor?
Chair Holbert, I believe that is true of the 5.25 allocation. It was anticipated that we would be in preliminary engineering at this time. The long process, shall we say, with the FTA to release their figures to let us move into the next step has been a delay. It's been longer than we anticipated.
And if I might, you stated that you hope that the the information would come back out of the FTA soon. This committee has to make bonding recommendations by, I think, the third week of March. Will that information be available by then?
Chair Holbert, I certainly hope so. We are in contact with the FTA almost on a daily basis, trying to make sure they have the information that they need and prompting them for release of that information.
All right, thank you. Representative Abrams.
Oh, Madam Chair, I learned that, and I don't see Representative Hausman in the room, so I would have asked her if she was in the room, that some advocates are asking for $50 million for the Central Corridor. Does the administration or the Metropolitan Council think of any reason in which $50 million worth of bonding for the Central Corridor is needed during the 2006 session?
Ms. McCarthy.
Chair and Representative, yes, my understanding is that the Ramsey County Rail Authority has requested $50 million for that project. I believe that is in anticipation of, shall we say, saving out the funds that will be needed. There's rather large capital expenditures that will be needed in the upcoming years for this project. And so they're looking ahead to those additional phases of the project.
Representative Abrams.
That wasn't my question. My question was, is there any need whatsoever for the legislature to commit $50 million of our bonding capacity for the Central Corridor at this time, or can it wait until the 2007 or 2008 session?
Ms. McCarthy.
Chair Holberg and Representative, the Metropolitan Council requested $10 million when they submitted their request to this, so we did not request $50 million.
Madam Chair.
Madam
Chair, Representative Abrams, the council, when we submitted our request to the Department of Finance, we requested $10 million. At that point, we were waiting for these numbers that we are anticipating coming in from the FTA at that point. To be able to move forward with potentially that $10 million request. Since those numbers were not available in the governor's recommendations for the bonding bill, he put $2.5 million in his bill as a recommendation. We look at that, and the governor in his remarks when he talked about Central Corridor remarks regarding his request for Central Corridor said that he supports the corridor. The project isn't ripe at this point. We need to see what those numbers are, and the $2.5 million is a placeholder, maybe put it in that category, but that we'd go back and look at what the potential allocation we put toward that project in this bonding bill. But as Ms. McCarthy stated, we had requested $10 million for that project, and we have a separate request than what Ramsey County has.
Thank you.
And if I might, I would like to take a break at this time now that the majority of the committee members are here. We do have some announcements. As many of you know, Mr. Williams retired after 37 years in the House.
We'd like to welcome Matt Burris, who is the new researcher that will be serving our committee. And he's been around for a while upstairs and spent some time with Mr. Williams before he left, and I'm certain he'll do a great job for the committee, and although Mr. Williams will be greatly missed. The second item is we have a new page for this year, Stephen Regis. He's been assigned to our committee and was here to help us, and we're grateful that we're here. And then on a sadder note, some of you may have seen the notice, our committee administrator, Jeremy Estenson, is not here today. His father passed away earlier this week. The funeral's tomorrow. He likely will not be back till next week. I do have a card that we'll pass around for any of you that would like to sign a card for he and his family. While the death wasn't expected in that his father had battled brain cancer for a while, it's still a tough time for him, and if you would remember him in his prayers, I'm sure he would appreciate that. As far as scheduling goes, there will be no meeting next Tuesday because of the break for caucuses. We are hoping to have a MnDOT presentation next Thursday, but because of the state of the state, and I've been informed that there is an intent to have a 3 o'clock floor session on that day, it's unlikely that there will be enough time for us to have a meeting. I'm still hopeful that we will. Knowing this group as I do, I know that you're probably not into a whole lot of extra special meetings, so at this time I'm just going to try and compress our schedule a little bit into the next week if we lose our meeting time next Thursday. There's a very good likelihood that we won't meet again until week following next, so that's just kind of an update. Are there any questions on any of those items? All right, thank you. Sorry for the interruption. You'll continue.
Chair and Representative, the third project that we're requesting funds for this year is the Cedar Avenue Bus Rapid Transit. This project is being led by Dakota County Regional Rail Authority and the transit provider MVTA, Minnesota Valley Transit Authority, in that area is heavily involved in the project also. This corridor is 16 miles long, and it runs from the Mall of America to County Road 70 in Lakeville. It has a combination of state highway component, which is Highway 77 north of 138 in Apple Valley, and then south of that point it is a County Highway 23. The other project is also a multi-phase project. It actually has four phases, and phase one is underway right now, and it has several components that are moving forward very well. First is the expansion of the Apple Valley Transit Station, which is definitely under capacity right now based on its use. Design engineering is underway, and they'll be working towards a concept plan to expand that facility and construct it as part of phase one. They also are working on developing a concept plan for a transit station at Cedar Grove in Eagan. That's near the intersection of Highway 13 and 77. In Lakeville, there is work underway to site a park ride in the vicinity of 185th. And after siting that, the idea is to look towards design and constructing that station. And then the fourth component of Phase 1 is to improve that four-mile segment of the bus shoulder lanes on the county road section. Again, the request here is for $5 million to continue work on these four components of the Phase 1 project.
And do you have a listing of what you've done with the $10 million we gave you last year, what it's been expended on, and how much you have left?
Let me see if I... Madam Chair, I think I'll take the opportunity. Dan Crome, who's the project manager with Dakota County, is here, and this way I know you'll get the exact information.
That would be great.
Thank you.
So the purpose here today is to review what you did with the money, and so if you're able to enlighten us on the $10 million that was approved last year and how much of it has been spent and how, that would be greatly appreciated.
Madam Chair, my name is Dan Crome, and I'm Dakota County Transit Manager. I want to give you a brief update on where we are with the $10 million in spending. As Arlene had mentioned, We're in the process of expanding the Apple Valley Station, the Cedar Grove Station development, and finding and purchasing land for the Lakeville Station. In our 2006 and 2007 work plan, those three items are scheduled to be completed. If they're completed, it'll be an estimated cost of $21.5 million. With the $10 million last year and the federal money we have in place and also the commitment from the Dakota County Regional Rail Authority, we have about $15.1 million. If we stay on track to spend everything we're going to spend, we're $5 million short. So we're anticipating the $10 million from last session and any bonding funds we receive this session to be spent in 06 and 07.
Representative Hausman.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and to any of the three of you, I think. Isn't one of our problems that, unlike roads and highways, we don't have a dedicated fund? So the planning agencies in MnDOT can look 20 years out, and they don't have to seek funds for a total project because in any given year, they've got the money to spend what needs to be spent that year. In these transit corridors, we've got this other problem. We don't have a fund, and especially when we have to show the federal government a commitment to the project so that they give their 50%, the legislature has to show them a commitment, a significant commitment by certain dates so that there is matching money. In this case, I don't know if it's the federal issue so much. And if we had a similar fund, as roads and highways do, where the Metropolitan Council could have a 20-year plan, and every year you knew what you need, what you actually had to expend that year, and have the fund and the authority to do that, we would have a different process here.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Shetman.
Representative Hausman, I appreciate your comments. I think it would be fantastic to have a dedicated funding source that we'd be allowed to plan over a large, long period of time. But I think that with the constitutional amendment that is on the ballot this upcoming election, I think dedicating MBES for the with the whatever issues there may be with the language, we still believe that dedicating that to transit into highways would be a fantastic step forward. And I guess that's probably about the best way of answering your question without going into too much detail, but I think that would be fantastic.
I sometimes think if we had to do the same with roads as we do with transit corridors, if we had to have the entire amount for Highway 494 on the table before they could begin a project, we'd never build a single road one of those big highway projects in the metropolitan area. And that's unfortunately the problem here, that the transit corridors are in a different spot. And we're not necessarily like other states there. When I've gone to some of those national conferences and I've had all of those people at the front table telling us how they did it, they talk about everyone at the table right from day one and they just keep moving everyone along. And when I've asked the question, but what happens when you finally have to go to the legislature and get approval? And they all said, we don't. So we have a unique situation here with these transit corridors. It is not how other states do it, and we've really got ourselves in a box, because what we end up doing then is having kind of huge region-by-region kind of political struggles in order to build a system that's going to get us ready 20 years from now. Yeah. And we're way behind.
Mr. Shetman.
Madam Chair and Representative Hausman, like I said, we'd love to have a dedicated funding source like that, but I'd also like to state to the legislature that the council and our partners do appreciate the money that you have given us in the past for these transitways, because without that we would be even further in the dark. But your comments are well taken, but at the same time I don't want to not address the fact that we do appreciate the support that we've received from the legislature and this committee in the past as well.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a curiosity note that I've kind of wondered about the last 2 years or so. How is it that both the I-35W BRT plan and the Cedar Avenue BRT plan end up in Lakeville? isn't, are they trying to get everybody out of town down there, or what is it? Is there a possibility that some other worthwhile area down there ought to receive a terminus and park and ride and so forth? Is there some reason that, what is the reason?
If it's an airport, everybody wants to get to Lakeville,
yes.
Not leave Lakeville. Mr. Shetman, who also lives in Lakeville, I don't know if you want to take a crack at this.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart.
Is it taxing this?
He does.
Make Representative Larson's sister is my neighbor, and so she's, I mean, there's some Lakeville love there as well.
They like the carpool now that they have the seat.
Yes,
two triplets, too.
Yes, we do. And we'll,
triplets.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, thank you for your comments. But I don't know if you really want to respond. If you do, we're prepared to give you one.
Curiosity.
Okay.
I think his seriousness is probably the edge of the growth area.
Yes.
And then 10 years from now, it's not going to be Lakeville. It's going to be Farmington or Eureka, and that would be similar around the whole perimeter of the 7-county metro area. And pretty soon, we'll be jumping out of Met Council's jurisdiction, and then we'll have a whole new problem.
Representative Holbrook, again, we'll have a bill. All right, I'll joke you aside. We are prepared, unless there are other questions regarding Cedar Avenue, to move on to the update on the regional transit bonds that last year in the public finance bill, with a lot of leadership from Representative Abrams, we were able to receive $64 million worth of authority, and Arlene is prepared to discuss that as well.
And, you know, if I might, I've seen, you definitely regurgitated a presentation that you gave to another committee last week, and I guess I'm a little disappointed that you didn't provide more detail. The purpose was to tell us what you did with the money. And so I still expect some kind of document to be provided to this committee that tells us what did you do with the money that we gave us last year, and what is provided here, and I don't think this should be any surprise.
Nope.
Is not sufficient information for us to be able to ascertain how you're using this money that we give you and set a framework for what your actual needs are moving forward into making budget and bonding recommendations to the Capital Investment Committee. So if you would provide at least some detail of the money that we gave you, what you still have on hand, what you expended it, and for what, that would be helpful to us. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And just along those lines, as I've, you know, gotten more involved in the 35W BRT actual implementation, and it's also helpful to see, you know, in these bonding requests to break down, you know, to the greatest extent you can, and obviously you can't have a line item budget to every penny, but to get a sense of, like, for example, on the 46th Street station, $3.2 million, generally what would that be used for? I think that would be very, very helpful, too.
And, Madam Chair, and members, I appreciate your comments, Madam Chair. To break down this money between preliminary design, when it's put into a pot of money, is very hard to break down and decipher, and I apologize if that isn't, if that is the detail, to the extent of detail that you want. I will be happy to sit down and talk to the folks at the different counties who are really taking the steps into making sure that how that money is spent. I will have that to you by next Tuesday.
I think it's just a matter of trying to be accountable for the people's money, and I think that far too often committees don't ask,
yep,
how did you spend this? We have bonding bills, and then everybody comes back in and wants more money, and not very often do we hear, what did you do with what we already gave you? And I think it's a fair question for us to ask as a committee on behalf of the taxpayers that are paying for these things.
Yes. And Madam Chair, you'll get no argument from us.
Thank you. All right. Next, we're going to talk about the bonding authority that's been granted to the Met Council. I've had some comments from various providers about the amount of bonding that's going on with this fund of money, so I thought it'd be, while it's not under this committee's jurisdiction, Representative Abrams usually carries this, but it certainly applies to the transit situation and the metropolitan area, and that we would also like to see what you're doing with that authority and that money as well.
Madam Chair and representatives, in 2005, the legislature granted $64 million in regional transit capital bonds. As I think most of you know, this is a fund that is authorized annually by the legislature, and it is property tax-based. The reason, normally we seek about $32 million every year. The reason that we requested $64 million is that in 2004 the public finance bill was not passed, so it was essentially for 2 years last year. This authority is very important to us because it allows us to move multi-year projects forward. The majority of our projects are 2 or 3 years long. Procuring buses, which is a major user of these funds, is about a 2-year process. So once we award a contract, there's usually an 18-month delivery, and we require about 6 months to issue requests for proposals and make a selection and award a contract. So these projects are over a few years. We will not authorize our staff, give them approval to move forward on a project until all the funds are in place to complete that. And that's what these $64 million in funds were applied to. Through our capital budget, we have committed these funds to projects that are now approved to move forward. This $64 million, in addition to some earlier RTC capacity, equates to right now we have $87 million in bonding authority that has not been issued, but it is committed to projects that are in our multi-year plans. In fact, $42 million of bonds will be issued in the very near future. So again, when these the capital budget identifies the approved projects, and we will not allow a project to be in our capital budget until all the funding is lined up. And this, having this money available to plan for our projects is very important to us, to have a work plan a couple years in advance.
Representative Abrams.
Madam Chair, a missing ingredient of your comments is that you normally come to myself and the others who deal with the regional transit bonds
mm-hmm.
with a list of projects that I wouldn't say are illustrative. They're more than illustrative. They are kind of good to go
mm-hmm.
and are, let's say, about 95% followed, at least through the years. And in addition to the contribution from the regional transit funds, there's always a line for the federal dollars that are being matched.
Mm-hmm.
And at least what the interest of those of us who have been interested in this issue is to try to leverage the capacity, the bond capacity, which is granted to the Met Council to the largest extent possible, so that you're able to get maybe $50-$55 million worth of projects mm-hmm. for $32 million worth of bonding capacity. Well, at least that's been the interest in the past. The other thing the members ought to be aware of is that the list is highly negotiated between the Metropolitan Council and the variety of the opt-outs to make sure that there is some degree of equity between the opt-outs and the and Metro Transit. But within the Metro Transit allocation, at least I've seen an attempt to have some sort of regional equity, so that there'll be projects on the east side of the river and projects north of 694, as well as projects west of the river and projects south of 494. And the Met Council has been pretty good about giving me any of the supporting documentation, and I'm sure that that money, that documentation is available to any member of the committee who's interested.
I'm sorry, Representative Anderson.
Sure. Representative Abrams just mentioned lists of different things. Do you have them available today?
Mr. Shetland?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, we just passed out the page just passed out the list of the $64 million worth of projects and investments we can make with the $64 million. It should be, I believe it's in your hands.
Mr. Obama.
Madam Chair and Representative Abrams, this was the 64 that we received from last year. The 32.8 that we're pursuing this year, that is the figure that we've arrived at. The projects that we will be able to fund with that are still in the process of being identified. And when we come to the tax committee, or when we come back to the Transportation Finance Committee, we will have those projects for you, but they aren't quite ready yet.
And if I might, do you have a list for the $87 million in bonding authority that you have in a reserve?
Madam Chair, we could provide that list.
And then what's the most amount? Is $64 million the most that you've bonded for in any particular year?
Madam Chair and members, I think I'll ask Beth Lister Anderson to come up here. We're not going to be levying $64 million. This was made up. We requested $64 million because back in 2004, there wasn't a public finance bill, and we like to stretch this out over a longer period of time so we have the authority since we take so we know that we have the authority before we actually are able to purchase these buses and shelters. And
I understand that. I guess we talked about this a little bit before. My concern is that you have $87 million in unexpended bonding authority sitting there.
Yep.
And some people might say that you should probably spend that first rather than to continue to accumulate a larger and larger unexpended authority, because at some point somebody else could be in charge of the Met Council and choose to levy for the entire authority that's there in 1 year, or, I'm just a little uncomfortable with continuing to pile up this authority and not really having a plan for when it's expended. But it appears to me it's being banked, and that makes me uncomfortable.
Madam Chair, I appreciate those comments. We discussed this last Thursday at our Oversight Commission, and Beth Wickstrom Anderson, our CFO, we had a conversation regarding this, and she will be able to address that question for us.
Great, thank you. Welcome to the committee. Just state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Beth Wickstrom Anderson. I'm the Council's Chief Financial Officer. The outstanding bonding authority that we have, which is $87 million, which includes, just to be clear, that the 64. So the 64 is a subset of the 87. It's not 87 plus 64.
And maybe you could move the microphone one more or the other. Thank you.
I will.
Better? There we go.
Better. Thank you. So the $87 million of outstanding bonding authority includes the $64. This year we'll be issuing $42 million of debt, and so that will bring the $87 million down. And if we receive the $32 million, you can see that we'll actually be reducing that $87 by 10 net, and we'll have $77 million. It is our intention after that point to issue $32 million of debt each year, because that's the number that we can issue and keep the property taxes to the homeowners of the region flat, or to the property taxpayers in the region flat. The council has a policy that we will not increase the dollar amount of the levy. I'm not talking about the rates. The rates are actually going down. The dollar amount of the levies increase only 1% each year. That 1% is intended to capture the new value in the region. So new homes, new commercial property. That's what the 1% is intended to capture. So essentially we're keeping the levies flat except for the new growth in the region. So the $87 million will reduce slightly, and then we expect it to stabilize. Now, what we've got with the $87 million, as Judd said, is, and I think as Arlene has talked about a little, is the need to be able to start processes that take us sometimes 18 to 24 months, including going for the federal grants that we'd like to get. What we don't want to do is apply for a federal grant when we don't have the local match nailed down. So unless we have bonding authority that we can say we have the local match for that project we'll do in 18 months, we wouldn't really be able to apply for those grants. So that's why we like to have this money in advance of when it looks like we're going to actually spend the cash out the door. Does that help the committee? I'm hoping.
And I understand that. I'm just questioning the amount, and is it a reasonable amount to allow for that to happen, but not so large as that it becomes dangerous. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Wistrom Anderson. I'm just to kind of grasp this a little clearer for me, and I think these are good questions, Madam Chair, that you're asking, is, for example, this hybrid bus is near and dear to my heart. You have 3.805 700 on that. What is the timeline, you know, that that's spent down? And, you know, just to get a sense of, like, you know, the amount of time that it takes on some of these line items. And, you know, do you have sort of with these individual line items kind of like a plan, you know, you're going to purchase X number of buses 1 year. And so if we were to kind of spend this down, how long would that take?
Ms. McCarthy.
And Chair and Representative, you're exactly right that, for example, the hybrid buses is very typical of the bus procurement, and so it's roughly a two-year timeline for that particular line item. And while it varies, construction projects would have similarly, even longer, often perhaps three-year type timelines on them. As far as spending it down, let's see.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Woodstrom Anderson.
Maybe I can take another approach on this as well. The council adopts a six-year capital improvement program. In the capital improvement program, we have projects which are authorized to move forward, and we have projects that we hope to work on sometime in the next 6 months. The hybrid buses, for example, are in the authorized capital project section, so they're approved to move forward. When the fleet plan, which we have a fleet plan for all the buses that we have, when the fleet plan says it's time to replace a bus or add a bus, then we would order those buses, and from that point, whether if we have to do an RFP, it would take about 2 years. If we already have a purchasing process in place, it would take about 18 months. The $87 million is virtually all committed in the authorized capital program that this council has already adopted. So there wouldn't be a large amount of money for a new council, for example, to scrub and spend on something else, because really it's already committed to projects that are in process right now. So I'm hoping this helps a little bit. It's a complicated
process. Mr. Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick follow-up. So then all of these projects that you've laid out in this regional transit capital program, you would extend the money within 6 years. Is that a reasonable assumption?
Ms. Lidstrom Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would say most of the projects would be spent in much shorter time than 6 years, but the six-year plan is a document that we have that shows all these projects. And they actually show the expected expenditures by year in the program that we've got.
Thank you.
All right. Any additional questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you. One of the same questions that Representative Anderson had regarding the federal bus match, is that Minnesota's portion that we pay, so there is another match of federal funds coming. It shows for MTS federal bus match $631,000. Is that our match with the federal funds on those coming in?
Representative Anderson, where in the piece of paper are you referring
to? I'm at the top where it says opt-outs.
Mm-hmm. All right.
There's several places in there where it has federal bus match, and I'm just wondering if that's our portion that we have to put forward, and how much more money are we talking about then for, is it equal amount, I guess?
Ms. McCarthy.
Chair Holbrook, Representative, this is the match amount on bus procurements and other facility type projects. The required local match is 20%, a minimum 20%.
And Madam Chair, when...
Senator Anderson.
When, Senator? No, I'm hearing things. When we recycle out, get rid of these buses, is the cost of recycling included in this cost of getting rid of the old buses?
Ms. McCarthy.
Representative Holberg and Chair Holberg and Representative, these buses have different lives depending upon their size. The majority of the fleet, as required when you use federal funds, the FTA has a minimum life for the fleet, and the majority of the buses are required to have a 12-year life. And so what you're asking is, at the end of that 12-year life, we put buses up for sale, is how they're recycled. if I'm understanding your question correctly. So in essence, they're replaced at 12 years.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Shetland next, sir.
I'll just be
out of range. The money's out of range, you know.
Maybe had another question.
I'm sorry. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't know if you were going to follow that same line of questioning before. I'd like to raise another question.
Certainly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Ms. McCarthy, in your engineering costs, do you, is that in-house or is that consultant or what percentage or how do you work? How much, what are your portions that are in-house engineering?
Ms. McCarthy. Chair Holberg and Representative, that varies on a project-by-project basis. We do have some in-house engineering staff. So on projects like Park Rise, where we're working on some layout concepts and transit centers, sometimes we will do that work with our in-house staff, certainly maybe some initial concepts to decide if we want to move forward with more detailed design. But then once we get beyond the preliminary concept phase, it is rather typical that we would hire an engineering firm to come up with the more detailed concepts of the project, and then most of our facilities are designed by consultant firms.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Shetland.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We, if we are satisfied with the discussion regarding the regional transit bonds, we can talk a little bit about our 2006 request, although I think Beth handled that pretty well. So if there are other questions, we'll move on to the request that we had to explain or what the council did last year when we did an emergency transit levy. And Beth Wister-Anderson will be able to handle that as well.
All right, thank you. This is a fun one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's interesting, and I'm ready. I'm ready. Madam Chair and members, I'm just going to do a little background first. In late fiscal year 2005, so May, June of 2005, the council found itself facing a shortfall from this very volatile revenue source that we have, motor vehicle sales tax. Our budget was built on, for state fiscal year 5, this table you can look at, our budget was built on the February of 2004 forecast. And you can see by the time the February of 2005 forecast came, and I know you're all aware of these numbers and how this has moved, the forecast number was substantially reduced. Because of the volatility of this new new revenue source, when the statute was created to put the council on the motor vehicle sales tax or give us a portion of that, let's switch to the next slide for me, Jed. Because of the volatility of this revenue source, a safety net was put in place in case there would ever be a year where the actual revenues from the source were less than the rate of inflation than the year before. I know it's complicated. The statute also authorizes a tax levy to repay some debt that we would be able to issue if there was ever that shortfall. And this next slide will show the calculation of this. So the statute provides for us to do a calculation like this. In fiscal year 4, the amount was 100, and the actual MVES revenue that went into the Metropolitan Transit Fund was $127 million, almost 0.5. When you increase that by a 2% CPI factor, and the statute didn't provide for which CPI, so we conservatively took 2%. We agreed with the Department of Finance that was a very conservative and fair number. That gives you $130 million. The forecast at the time on the chart that I showed you previously from February of 2005 was $122 million. So that said, according to the statute, that we could issue short-term debt of about $7.8 million to help supplement the shortfall in that revenue source for fiscal year 2005. Now, the statute, as we read the statute, it meant that we'd have to issue the debt before the end of the fiscal year. So in June, the council was faced with, next slide please, Judd, determining whether they should make this decision. And essentially, they made the decision to issue the debt. This chart shows you what had sort of occurred during fiscal year 5. We had been setting money aside in a reserve to help mitigate this kind of volatility in this revenue source. From June of 04 to June of 05, you can see that we used $10 million of the reserve, and the reserve was essentially, in May, the reserve was about $600,000. At the end of June, we had $1,800 in our reserve. So the council did make a decision to issue this debt. And of course, as you've heard previously, I said the council has a policy that they will not increase property taxes to homeowners in the region. So we try to capture that growth, but what was very important to the council is we would be able to issue this debt and levy the tax and still, under the policy they've got, to not increase taxes to the homeowners and the other property taxpayers. I'm going to come back to this slide in just a second, but if you could just move on. This shows you the levies that the council pays, that the council actually levies on the taxpayers in the region. And you can see at the very, this is called tax anticipation debt service. Essentially, it's selling debt in anticipation of more revenues coming in from the tax levy. And so in 2006, we were able to remove some levies, move some debt service schedules out, and really be able to accommodate this additional debt service in 2006 to be able to get this additional money for the motor vehicle sales tax. The council also determined that they would, could you back up just one second? Thank you, Judd. Council determined that they would like to put this money in reserve to help mitigate the same kind of issue that we might have in a future year. So the $7.8 million that we issued for this safety net debt, we put in the reserve in case, and the chart I'm showing you here is the chart the council had available to them at the time of the decision. We do have better information than this now, but I wanted you to see what we were looking at in terms of the decision they made. So they made a decision to put the $7.8 million in reserve, and of course we know that that revenue has not performed as we would have hoped it would perform again in this year. You can go ahead and move forward too. Thank you, Doug. Now, we did receive for fiscal year 5, $1.8 million in July. So that very low level of reserve that we knew about in June, in July, the monies from fiscal year 5, the kind of cleanup money that we get, we did get $1.8 million. So that was really helpful, and that, of course, went in the reserve as well. This chart shows you our projected motor vehicle sales tax balance sort of in January. Projected at June 30th, and then there is a portion of the levy that we issued, the debt that we issued, and the with the levy backup that is set aside for opt-outs. And then we are hoping to have $7.8 million still available at the beginning of fiscal year 7. Now, we do know from the last forecast that the fiscal year 7 revenue projections for motor vehicle sales tax are really very significantly lower than the last forecast. So we have some work to do on what we'll do as that starts to come true. And we are seeing for fiscal year 6 to a little bit lower forecast in actual revenues than we were hoping.
So are these numbers based off the November forecast or the February forecast on this sheet?
These are the projected. These were based off of the February forecast. The November forecast, excuse me. And for 2006, we're not that far off from 2006 from our the numbers that we used. 2007 is a substantial change.
Representative Abrams.
Madam Chair, it's more of a statement. I'm going to have a bill today on bill introductions that will redefine motor vehicle sales tax. As you may recall, a couple years ago, we required that the sales tax on leased vehicles be upfronted so that they be treated as new car purchases. But it isn't viewed as motor vehicle sales tax. It's viewed as a sales tax on the lease. And what the bill will do is redefine motor vehicle sales tax to capture the sales tax on leased vehicles. So I guess if there's somebody from the fiscal staff here, somebody can make a note. I would be somewhat interested in knowing what the February forecast versus November forecast versus actuals were on the sales tax on auto leases since we've upfronted it, to see if maybe the motor vehicle sales tax is traditionally configured is decreasing, but the sales tax on leases are increasing because people are leasing rather than buying. But I'd kind of be interested in that analysis. This is a pretty good price tag on it, Madam Chair. I think it's like $43 million a year. On the other hand, if you're going to treat it like a sale, you know, I don't want to do the bill here right now, but if you're going to treat it like a more vehicle sales tax on the way in, well, maybe we ought to be dealing with it as a sales tax throughout. But I would certainly, given a short session, ask the fiscal staff to start doing some of the background work on this, because this could be an answer to some of the questions.
And Representative Abrams, Mr. Walls, is making notes as he spoke, and he's real good about getting this information, so I'm sure he'll be able to help you with that. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think my question might be to Representative Abrams instead of them, although anyone might be able to help me. I've always struggled since the property tax reform bill relative to transfer funding, how opt-out still fit in that. And now I see this less the opt-out share. How does that make sense anymore given that bill that passed the property tax reform?
Madam Chair.
Representative Abrams.
The way it makes sense is that at the time of the opt-outs were given a portion of the sales tax that went through the Metropolitan Council that represented their share of what their property taxes were to pay for the opt-out services. So that's how it makes sense.
And
Representative Hausman.
Then we were going to depend less on the property taxes, right?
Representative Abrams.
That's correct. So what happens is a Met Council gets the pool, and they have obligations to the opt-outs based upon a variety of formulas so that the opt-outs don't pay property taxes, too. They participate in the motor vehicle sales tax pool that the Metropolitan Council administers. And therein lies kind of part of the problem with the transit tax area, is that you have two issues there. The first issue is kind of, why should I pay for old debt? And then the second issue is that if you don't have more money going to the Metropolitan Council to serve, let's say Rogers, seeing if there's
nobody
at the table. Let's say Rogers. You don't have money to serve Rogers, and they want to bring them into the area, and it's going to cost you $2 or $3 million a year to provide bus service to Rogers. Well, then that would of necessity means that there's $2 or $3 million less for the rest of the system. So that even though you're increasing service to Rogers, even if you're able to solve the debt issue, you are decreasing service for everybody else. So those are the kind of two thorny transportation, finance / property tax issues around what do you do with some of these things that I don't think anybody anticipated at the time, Representative Hausman.
I think my frustration, because the property tax is this not based on your ability to pay, it's a regressive tax, you know, when it's applied unfairly, I just think, I really struggle with what we're doing to our taxpayers with our decisions here. And in the metropolitan area, on this issue, particularly because it's complicated by the opt-outs, and it's complicated by what we've just heard about this motor vehicle sales tax fund as it relates to the property tax reform bill. Do we have an obligation to our property taxpayers to be very clear that we're treating everybody fairly? You know, in Greater Minnesota, they've got a simple formula that I think is still true, MnDOT's here, and it's 80-20. 80% of their transit money comes from state and federal, and 20 is on their local property taxes. And if it were kind of that neat and clean for everyone in the state, I would not have this problem. But, I think we have an unequal property tax burden that we're imposing, and we don't quite even know how we would explain it.
Madam Chair?
Representative Abrams.
I would then encourage you to support the constitutional amendment on the ballot, because that will give everybody the flexibility that's necessary in order to do the reforms, because you'll be able to put more money in the system, and it's much easier to reform a system when you're putting some money in than when you're taking money out. So I would say that if the constitutional amendment passes, that we can probably solve some of the opt-out problems and some of the transit district problems, because there'll be a bigger pot in order to use to solve problems, Representative Hausman.
And I think the last run that we did that showed the funding of the Metropolitan Transit System, less than 10% was on the property tax, and somewhere around 90 was on sources paid for by all taxpayers, federal and state resources.
That would be unusual, because that I've never ever been given that percentage before. It's always closer to that.
I'll be happy to provide that to you. And Representative Leader, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. As long as we have Representative Abrams here, you kind of piqued my interest when you talk about formula, because that's always an issue here. You know, am I correct in assuming then that you say the present formula for the opt-out determination here is based on past property tax levies? And wouldn't it be true to say that, I don't know, but I want to ask this question, is the property tax values in the opt-out communities growing or at a greater pace or lesser pace than the other area? Because you could have a real imbalance, couldn't you?
Representative Abrams.
Madam Chair, I would certainly defer to the financial people from the Met Council, but it is a complicated formula, of which part, everything in transportation finance is a complicated formula, Representative Leader, part of which was the value of the property at the time. However, I would also say that when you start looking at property tax values, some of the fastest growing per capita tax bases are now in the inner ring and in the center cities. That the home prices, and there's going to be significant CI bounce back, particularly in downtown Minneapolis. So I think it is a much more complicated answer as to your question, which is a very good question. And I'll defer to the finance people, because it is a relatively complicated formula that everybody thought was fair at the time and perhaps needs a little look at again. Of course, the opt-outs will always say that it's not generous enough, and the rest of us will say that it is too generous. But
any other questions for Representative Abrams?
You know, I could bring down my folder so that I can get better answers. So.
Ms. Lidstrom Anderson, if you want to continue.
Madam Chair, that essentially ends my presentation. If you have other questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Are there any questions about the MVEST balance and the levy that was done to because of the falling MVEST revenues? Right. I see we also have statewide radio board membership in our packet.
Yes.
Which members, by the way, this is a bill I carried last year and then voted against when it got to 21 people on the board at the end of the negotiations. So, and I think we want to make that 22, from what I understand.
That. Thank you, Maureen.
Why don't you get a camera and let them use the state senate chambers for their meeting?
Here's Chetman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. With me today is Brian Lamb, who's the General Manager of Metro Transit, and he will speak to our initiative to seek membership to the statewide radio board.
All right, thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Lamb.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. For the record, I am Brian Lamb, General Manager for Metro Transit, and hopefully we can get through this without a single mention of a formula. I want to talk a little bit about our legislative request, which is to amend state law to include the council as a member of the statewide radio board. The rationale for this decision is that Metro Council and Metro Transit specifically have an ongoing role in statewide disaster readiness evacuation, for example. Just this last summer, during the evacuation discussions on Hurricane Katrina, Metro Transit was involved at a detailed level with other state agencies as we were talking about potentially moving large numbers of evacuees up into Minnesota and then eventually to Camp Ripley. And certainly when we talk about capacity to move large number of people, you know, the bus system really is one of those tools. A second one rationale is that as a long-standing member of the old Metro Metropolitan Area Radio Board, we bring a lot of experience in design and system architecture. In fact, our staff personnel have been involved in writing of the system RFPs in the past, the detailed design and review of the architecture, contract negotiations, and really an integral part of the first phase of the radio system that started in the metropolitan area. We bring us a decade of expertise from a user's perspective, both technical and operational experience in testing radio coverage, subscriber equipment, and agency design talk group needs. So we clearly, from a user's perspective, can add a lot of value from the to the statewide radio board. The voice of experience, and we were actively involved in the 800 megahertz radio system development since its inception in 1994. And in fact, currently, the Metropolitan Council operates 1,400 radios, which is 12.5% of all radios on the system. We have a dual focus, really. We have both a public safety and a public service. Metro Transit Police, for example, have statutory authority and coverage in 85 cities in the 7-county metro area, which next to the State Patrol and a few other regional and state organizations is probably the most wide span of jurisdictional authority within the state. And of course, on a daily basis, we have 1,400 bus operators acting as frontline visual respondents with reporting both from a traffic management standpoint, but also a public safety standpoint. You know, it's on a regular basis, Metro Transit employees spot problems, report them to our central computing, our central dispatch system, and the appropriate emergency services are dispatched to provide those kinds of assistance. We have a long investment history into the radio system. In fact, we contributed $3 million to build out the first phase of the system, which allowed the increase of the capacity by 15%. We have contributed $5.5 million in portable and mobile radios, and have developed $20 million to purchase and install the state's, a very state-of-the-art computer-aided dispatch system, which ties to our AVL, which really, I think, is state-of-the-art, as I said, not only here in this state, but also has been a model for other regions throughout the country. When you take a look at the current radio board members at the statewide level, it involves a diversity of membership, including membership from state departments. It's chaired by the Department of Public Safety and includes members from emergency services, the ambulance associations, the chief of police, fire associations, and then representatives from both the greater Minnesota as well as metro area leagues of cities. And so that we think that the Metropolitan Council would not only provide a value add, but ultimately as a large user, its voice is very appropriate on the statewide radio board. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have as long as they're not too difficult.
Representative Anderson.
Chair, vote now.
Well, I think we need a bill in front of us, actually, but if you would like to carry it, you might be willing to see if we can make that happen.
I just didn't want to make you disappointed.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Mr. Lamb, I presume a lot of the security monies are coming directly to the sheriff. Because you're not a member on this board, is the Metro Council getting monies directly to them from this federal security monies or whatever you call it?
Mr. Lamb.
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, if I understand the question correctly, there's security monies coming from a variety of federal sources, for example, for a variety of needs, some of which come directly to the Metropolitan Council. But when we're talking about that are contributing to the build-out and the ongoing operations of the statewide radio board, we do not get any of those monies directly. And in fact, what happens is that there's another complicated formula for funding, and currently the Metropolitan Council bears about 37% of the overall funding on the operational end of.
Any Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, then Mr. Lamb, are you participating in any of that total funding? Does that come back to you for your radios? But it's not direct; it's indirectly again, basically through the sheriff's office, isn't it?
Mr. Lamb.
Madam Chair, Representative Leader. There's two kinds of funding, actually, that we're talking about. There's continued infusion of grant and federal dollars and state dollars that contribute to the build-out. And then there's ongoing operating expenditures that are allocated on a formula to the users so that, you know, that you have, at the end of the day, a sustainable funding model. Those funds are already being appropriated, and actually just in this last year have the funding formula has changed somewhat so that on the operations end of the formula back to the users, as I said before, the Metropolitan Council currently bears, I believe, 37% of the ongoing operational expenditures, at least in the metropolitan area district.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Mr. Lamb, I guess that's what I'm trying to determine. Actually, you're participating and you don't have a voice in any of the decisions, and that's what you're requesting a position on the board for.
Mr. Lamb.
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, I couldn't have said it better myself. That's exactly correct.
All right. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lamb, do you know offhand what the 7 state departments are that have membership on here?
Mr. Lamb.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, the Department of Public Safety is chairing this. It's also as representatives from the Department of Transportation, Department of Natural Resources, Minnesota State Patrol, of course, which is the Department of Public Safety, Department of Health, Department of Finance, and also as the Chief Information Officer has a seat on the statewide radio board.
Well, Madam Chair, what is the Department of Finance doing on there? Just out of curiosity, maybe in a couple of others.
Representative Earhart, I said I was the chief author of this bill last year, and everybody wanted to be on it. They all had an interest, and I'm assuming that finance was overseeing the collection of the money and how it was being spent. And then we had, you know, it just grew and grew and grew, and I correct myself, it's at 20 members now, so this would make it 21. Mr. Lamb.
Madam Chair, we have had several discussions with the Department of Public Safety regarding our potential membership, and they support Metropolitan Council's interest in being on this board.
And maybe the one good thing is that they couldn't have a tie vote anymore. So that might be the upside. Any additional questions on the radio board proposal? Any other questions in general? Representative Hausman.
I may be asking the impossible, but I'm struck by, I recall, was it last year or the year before, we had that group that came before us from across the country that had been the peer review of the management of maybe just specifically Metro Transit. And we were told we've got this well-managed agency that has managed to do a lot with a little. I'm struck because of the way we fund this, that we spend a lot of time. I mean, I see one sheet here that totals up to $64 million. If we did something comparable as the Transportation Finance Committee to our highway, road and highway system in this state, we would be here forever. We wouldn't be able to serve on another committee or do anything in terms of the amount of detail we're looking at here and wanting to make some judgment about. And what concerns me is this is an organization that now has some responsibility for the planning for well over half the population of the state and continues to be the economic engine that drives the state. And I think today you just get a little bit of a sense of something very broken, but that we don't ever get to the discussion of how to fix something that's broken. Whether it's structurally, organizationally, tax policy-wise, and I don't even know how you'd get it on an agenda to talk about this, but I am just struck by a great fear that I have that we're not ready for the next 10 or 15 years in this metropolitan region, and that at a certain point it affects our economy. And if anyone has any ideas or advice about a meeting where we might try to grapple with some of that, but I just fear that we're not getting ourselves structurally organized for a very different future.
And Representative Hausman, I don't know of any organization that does more planning than Met Council, dictates more planning on its cities, townships, and counties. They have, what, four systems plan? Five systems? Four? We got rid of one? We combined two. We combined two. Okay. I've been told that the words affordable housing and system plan were used in the same sentence by a Met Council staffer in the last 2 weeks, so who knows where that's going. If we have time after we finish our work and get our bonding recommendations made, I'm sure Met Council will be happy to come in and share their transportation plan, which I believe is a 30-year plan. They have set the framework for the next round of comprehensive plan updates, which all the cities are required to do. So, I mean, I think that for if we were to compare our metropolitan region to other regions across the country, I would guess that we would have to be at least in the top 10 in the amount of planning and money that's spent trying to be prepared, if you will.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Representative Abrams.
I'm sure Representative Hausman, while I agree with you, let's take a look at where we came from during the 90s when we were both here. Which is, it was literally, I see Mr. Diaz, the retired Mr. Diaz in the audience.
6 days, Representative.
It was catch as catch can in trying to get any transit bonds through the legislature. It was literally begging conferees on the tax committee, before there was a separate public finance bill, to give the Metropolitan Council some authority. And this represented the reform in order to take out the suspicion that none of the money is going to go to the opt-outs, or none of the money is going to go to facilities east side of the river, or none of the money is going to go into Minneapolis. This represented the rational way in order to be able to get funding through on a continual basis, whereas before, it was literally the last item in the tax conference committee, and it just depended upon how mad the conferees were at each other as to if the rep council would get anything that year. So, you know, I agree with you that there may be a better way to do it, but I'll tell you, this represented the reform at the time when we started to do it this way.
Thank you. Any other comments? Representative Larson?
Well, I would just add to that discussion that perhaps Representative Hausman and Representative Abrams are both right on this, that there is a progression. I've been listening to Representative Hausman make that argument for all the years. I think we've been on the same, on this committee for all the years that I've been here. And I think that perhaps dedication of revenues will move us closer. I completely hear what you're saying, is that we have valued roads construction on a different plan and put it on a different playing field than we have with transit, and that we have a planning structure in place for transit, but we don't treat it as we let the planners decide how our region ought to look with the Make Sense Transit plan. We have to come back each time and make political decisions about that, and maybe we're not always making the best decisions in that structure. So maybe the dedication of revenues that hopefully we'll see in the future will, as Representative Abrams has suggested in another area, provide us with the revenues to be allowed to make the kind of reforms that we need to make for our public transit as well.
Thank you. Any additional questions or comments? All right, again, members, it's very likely we will not meet again until the week following next, but that means we're really going to have to get moving. And if anybody else wants to sign the card for Jeremy and his family, certainly do that, and with that, we're adjourned.